When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Danny and Dusty.
It's not your problem, Doc. You don't have to mix up in this.
That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, skin it. Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm your Huckleberry.
The Fan.
Hour number three, Danny and Dusty on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours. It's a Dusty and Will edition as Danny's sick, Rust is sick. We are here to party on, Wayne.
A do edition? Party on, Garth.
Do. Yeah, do edition. Dusty Ortner.
Dusty and Ortner.
I like it. College football playoff gets underway on Friday. We get Friday.
Can't wait.
Let's go. 27 degrees when it kicks off between Indiana and Notre Dame from South Bend, Indiana. And tickets are through the roof for that one. It's the Indiana State Championship game. I mean, let's go.
How many times have these teams met?
Indiana and Notre Dame?
For football? Almost never.
Really? You think so?
Nah, I'm sure it was a lot like back in the day, you know, like 70s. Just because
back
you
in
didn't
the day,
fly man. A lot.
All right, take a guess.
The amount of meetings?
Yeah. Got it.
50th.
This is the 50th. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. It is the first meeting since 1991.
Yeah. See, before planes.
The final score of that game was 49-27. So. Kind of a lot of points in that one. The very first game was 1898.
That makes sense.
And that was before points. The score of that game was 11-5. Indiana
won. Before points.
This will be the 30th meeting between the two teams.
Only 30th. So I was I was like on the mark there.
Notre Dame holds a 23-5-1 advantage. One tie.
You think they'll tie on Friday?
No.
I would agree with that.
I am assured this will not be a tie game.
I think that Notre Dame rolls.
It's going to be cold, though. It's going to be 27 degrees, and there's a lot of prove it on both these teams. Prove it for Notre Dame in that, can you throw the football?
Do they need to throw the football?
We will see.
Although, Indiana has a good D-line.
Indiana can touch you up.
They have a D-tackle that a lot of... There's some NFL buzz around him.
Well, that's a really good segue right there, Will, is because...
I'm a professional. Part-time.
ESPN has ranked the top 50 players in the college football playoff. 50 all the way down to 1. And you're talking about Mikhail Kamara, the defensive lineman?
Yes, thank you. Couldn't think of his name.
Yeah, he is... Really stinking good. He comes in on this list as the 21st best player in the college football playoff of the 12 teams that are there. In this, I think that there's a few things to extrapolate here. The Oregon Ducks lead the way with 6 players in the top 50 of the college football playoff, according to ESPN.
I bet you I could name them.
go ahead and try, because there's two guys that I'm surprised are not on this list.
Dylan Gabriel.
He is on the list.
You're going to throw Tez Johnson in there.
He is on the list.
You're going to throw Jordan Birch.
He is not on the list.
Wow. So then you're going to throw Mateo Uyunglele on the list.
He is on the list.
You are going to throw in, I would throw in Muhammad.
He's not on the list.
Wow. So then you're going to throw in Connerly.
Connerly is there.
Because he was an All-American.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to throw in Derek Harmon?
Derek Harmon.
So I've got five,
mm-hmm.
and I've got one more. Are you going to throw in Jordan James?
He is on the list.
Yeah. Bam. I knew I could do it, and with two misses.
Jordan James comes in at 37th. Mateo Uyunglele is 36th. Josh Connerly, an All-American, 34th. Tez Johnson, 15. Derek Harmon, and I love this. He is put in here as the 14th best player in the college football playoff. I think he is the most undervalued player in the Big Ten, especially in not being on the coach's first team All-Conference. Mind-blowing to me.
Yep.
He is so damn good, but the conference has 18 teams, really good defensive linemen, including Mason Graham. It's hard. It's tough to get on that first team, and we should get used to really damn good players not being on there. But Derek Harmon comes in at 14th, and Dylan Gabriel is number two on the list of best players in the college football playoff. The top five are Ashton Jeanty, Boise State running back, number one. Dylan Gabriel is number two. Cam Scadaboo, the running back of Arizona State, is number three. Tyler Warren, Penn State's star tight end, is number four. And Texas offensive lineman and Outland Trophy winner, Kelvin Banks Jr.
That guy's good.
Is number five. Abdul Carter nipping on his heels at number six. So what's interesting, Oregon does get the most players of any team in the playoff on this list of top 50 with six of them. I do think Jordan Birch and Jabbar Muhammad are two guys that I was like, wow, that's interesting. They're not considered in the top 50 here. You get it, though.
More so with Muhammad, I think Birch, if he doesn't miss those three games,
yep.
I think he's on the list. But then that probably takes Uyunglele off the list.
That sure does. And you're talking about the top 50. What I found fascinating in this is the list of the top 50 players. The Ducks' opponent in the Rose Bowl, potentially,
mm-hmm.
Ohio State, they also have six. They are tied for the top two of the most talented players in the college football playoff. Each of them getting six on the list.
The media loves Ohio State, though, so that doesn't surprise me. Like, that, on paper, they should be by far and away, but on paper, or at least with what the media gives them, they should be the team that's undefeated.
They are, I think, they're the most talented team in college football.
I have an issue.
They have
with that.
Two losses.
See, but that's the thing. If as talented as you, like, I have an issue with that because there's how many times do we look at what you were rated at in high school, and then instantly it's a big like, oh, that's a big get. Like the mm-hmm. one to me, Malachi Nelson. Malachi Nelson was a 5-star quarterback according to some rankings. He was the number one player in his class.
Mm-hmm.
He went to USC. He was there a year. He didn't earn the starting job.
Yeah.
He left.
Yeah.
He goes to Boise State. Boise State, look at us. We got a 5-star. He's there for a year. He doesn't get the job.
I don't,
he leaves.
I don't think they're talented for that reason, though. I look at Jeremiah Smith, who was a 5-star freshman.
For sure.
Really good.
He's
Caleb,
earned that.
But Caleb Downs, who came from Alabama.
Right.
Look at their front seven. Their defensive line is really damn good. The one spot that they have their weakness is depth on the offensive line, and their quarterback is not a top line quarterback. But nobody is
Agreed.
Saying Will Howard is.
But I but don't know
every
that the
sum of all of their other pieces are really damn good. Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins have both done it on the field. Like, we've seen them both do it and shine and be two of the best running backs in college football. For Judkins, it was at Ole Miss. For Henderson, it's been at Ohio State. He has been really stinking good. Emeka Ogbuka, if that's your second or third best receiver in your receiving core, yeah, you're really damn good. Like, I think Denzel Ward or Burke at corner, he's really good. Oregon was like, we got good guys too. We're going to try to go over the top on him. And they got him a couple of times. But that doesn't mean he's not a great player that we've seen. That's why I'd say they are so talented. JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer. Did they get put in check when they played against Oregon? Absolutely. Have we seen them play outstanding football over their body of work? Yeah. Have we seen them do it against Michigan? Yeah, we have.
Right.
Too, right?
But here's not...
And that's the collection of talent is so good. Are they poorly coached at times? Uh-huh. Is it head-scratching to see what Chip Kelly's play calling is at times? Absolutely. But that doesn't diminish the level of talent on their roster. It is really good.
Well, and maybe the Malachi Nelson comparison is poor for some of the Ohio State players. But yeah. But I think that there was a propping up of Will Howard. I would make the argument Will Howard looked better at Kansas State.
He absolutely did.
What they ask him to do isn't fair to what he is.
And that's not the player, that's the coaching, right?
And that's fair, right? That's fair. The other issue I have is with the O-line. Now, they are missing their starting center.
And there was left tackle.
Well, they're on their third string left tackle. They're playing their left guard
at
left tackle. That's a problem, right? And when they go up against a premier pass rush, they're going to have an issue.
And that's where they've always had
they're going to have an
their
issue
weakness
with Tennessee's,
was depth.
Tennessee's
up front.
D-line is nasty.
No doubt about it.
But here's my issue with that. Like, the hyping up of their center McLaughlin before he went out. He got ran out of Alabama. He was fine at Alabama.
He won the Remington Award.
He did this year. But he got ran out of Alabama.
Yeah, because he had bad snaps in the Rose Bowl last year.
That top-tier All-American left tackle, when he ran into a premier pass rush, he struggled.
Yep.
So maybe I'm more leaning on the coaching than necessarily the pure talent. I just think as a whole in all of sports, but really in college football and in the NFL as well, there is an issue of, well, look at him athletically. Athletically, he's a freak. Athletically, this player can do X,
Y, and Z. I didn't say
X,
Ohio
Y,
State's
Z.
The best team. I said they're the most talented roster. And there's a big difference there. There's a big difference there.
And I might make the argument that I think there are more talented teams.
Who?
I think Oregon's got more talent in certain spots. I think.
Well, in certain spots.
I think, aside from the QB spot,
in the most important position, absolutely, it's quarterback.
Yeah.
And that makes them a better team, right? And
right. They, so I think Oregon is a better team on paper.
I think Oregon is better coached as well.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's not what I'm saying, though. I'm saying that top to bottom, the talent across the roster at Ohio State is insane. And
yes.
Oregon is really close. Texas is really close. But you're talking about multiple All-Americans by coaches and media.
Yeah.
Across every level offensively and defensively. They're damn talented. But that doesn't mean they're the best team. I think they're not the best team because the most important position, they have a deficiency and they fall apart in crucial moments and situations.
And they have a weak O-line. And
they do, especially right now.
If they get through Tennessee,
yep,
they have to go through Oregon.
Yep.
Who I don't, as high as I am on Oregon, Tennessee might have a better defensive line.
Yep.
And they're without their best defensive lineman. Well, best front seven player in Peely. Like, he's gone. So
yeah.
I think Ohio State's they're in for trouble, man.
It's going to be a fun game though when Tennessee, because the elements will play a factor. Knoxville does get cold; it doesn't get 30 degrees, and it will. I think the one thing that both teams can benefit from though is that both teams run the ball effectively, and it's going to force Chip Kelly to be more creative in his run game, because I think there's times where Ohio State gets into this, we have all these weapons, we have all these tools on the outside, we've got to use them, and they're dangerous, and they are cheat codes.
They're so good.
But it's also, we know Chip Kelly can be creative in the run game, and you just haven't seen it. I think it's a product of your offensive line being banged up and having your left guard bump out to left tackle, having two of your starters of your five in a position group that you knew wasn't deep to begin with go down. There's a lot of issues that Ohio State's going to be working through, and they're going to be emphasized against Tennessee.
They ran the ball at under 3 yards a carry, I believe, against Michigan.
If that game,
and it was a poor game plan.
Michigan has been used to been playing one-handed, right? They know they can't throw the ball offensively. Their defense has adjusted and adapted to, we're going to be out on the field a lot.
We have to play with our hair on fire.
And we have to play a certain style of game. Ohio State got into that game where, like, wait a minute, we're not comfortable playing with one hand tied behind our back, and we don't know how to do this. And it showed. It looked uncomfortable for Ohio State.
The biggest issue has been that O-line and that running attack. And that's maybe why I'm jumping on the running backs a little bit more than maybe you think I should be. Because, and I know it works together, but since they've started having those injuries, those two running backs, right now they're rushing for less than 3 yards a carry.
Yeah,
since
it's
the big
falling
injuries.
Off, man. It's
and I understand off. That that's an O-line issue. It's also a running back issue. Because they're like, if you're as good as you like claim to be, make a man miss. Run through an arm tackle. And I get it. It's hard to run through a Graham arm tackle. I understand. I understand.
They ran through Indiana's defense pretty easily.
They did. They did. But they didn't run through Michigan's.
Nope. And that's an elite defense.
You take away a big run. You take one big run away from them, and they didn't run through Oregon's. And that's an Oregon defense that Penn State's O-line did incredibly well against, especially on the inside run game.
Dan Lanning will tell you, you can't take that one run again. Way. You can't do it.
You can't.
You can't do it.
But I can for my argument because it fits my argument better.
You're damn right you can.
I just, the run game has to improve. And if it doesn't improve, this Ohio State team is dead in the water, no matter what people say about how talented that roster is.
Faux show. Got to be better, man. I'm excited for that game. And we're going to dive into these games a lot deeper. As we're going to have Danny Cannell on tomorrow. He'll join us at 1 o'clock. Yeah, we're going to talk some college football playoff, talk some foosball. And we have a little bit of, yeah, this is great. All right, we got a little bit of news on the Washington State front. We'll get to that coming up next because Jake Dickert is now the head coach at Wake Forest, and Washington State has made a decision, not on who's going to be coaching next, though. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
All right, Jason Puckett from Puck Sports, he just tweeted this out. In the wake of 22 players entering the transfer portal, head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, running backs coach, all departing the Washington State football program. The athletic director, Ann McCoy, said, "We are not pulling out of the Holiday Bowl. They will play in the Holiday Bowl against Syracuse on, what day is that? Would that be the 27th? Next Friday is when the Holiday Bowl is? So they will be playing Syracuse in the Holiday Bowl from Snapdragon Stadium in San Diego. I like that move from Washington State. We talked about this at length earlier in the show, and if you missed any of the show, go check it out in the Odyssey app, in the audio vault. But we had this conversation of, you know, can you do it? How does this look? We just mentioned it's not just Jake Dickert. You don't have offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach. Those are probably the three guys that usually get the nod in an interim role. All three of those are gone. Running backs coach, also gone.
They could bring back the DC if they wanted to.
What they need to do is they need to bring in Max Borgi and company because Borgi wants to coach the team, damn it.
I'm all on board. They should go all-stars. Like, go back and get Leaf.
Go get Gabe Marks.
Yes.
Throw him out there.
My old wide receiver coach, not that he coached me necessarily. Now I'm blanking on his name. Coach Gibb, Brandon Gibson. Go grab him. He's already coaching in college football.
Yeah, just change everything in a week.
Yes.
All your terminology.
It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that hard.
No.
Football is football. Just
look,
run the football plays.
The reality of it is the touchdown plays and the stop a touchdown play. That's what you want to. Those are the two plays you want to run. Stop a touchdown play and the touchdown play. But this is an incredibly difficult situation that Washington State is in right now because of where you're at in the calendar. The fact that the portal being open and the way that we've seen mass defections happen from schools that lose their head coach. And the schools that are not in power conferences. Hell, the schools in power conferences. Look at what's happened at USC. Look at what's happened at Alabama. There's reports out there that Alabama is now begging their boosters for more money because they don't have the funds to compete in the NIL space. That's wild. And it was from Clay Travis, so don't know if I really believe it all that much. But if you look at what's going on with the portal, power conferences are losing teams or players in droves. At Washington State, your margin for error and the amount of guys that you can lose is already thin, though. And to have 22 guys already out, some of those guys may have been told, and that's another thing that when people are reacting to the transfer portal, some of those guys were probably told by the staff, hey, probably not a good fit for you to be here. We're going to try to upgrade our roster and upgrade our talent, and we don't feel like you're in the fold here. That happens more than a lot of people imagine. Most of the guys that go into the portal, in fact, are in that position. It's the John Mateers, the number one quarterback and number one player in the transfer portal right now. Those are the ones that catch headlines because they're really damn good. And those ones are the ones that hurt. Your offensive tackle, when he enters the portal, those are the ones that hurt, right? But not all portal entries are created equal. And of the 22 that are gone, yeah, some of them, it stings and it hurts. But others, that was actually by design by a staff that has now left you hanging when Dickert goes and he runs off to Wake Forest. I know a lot of people are upset about it. Rightfully so. You have every right to be pissed off about it because of the lot in life that you're at. But it's where you're at right now. And for fans, you could be upset within that athletic administration, within that football program. You got to pick yourself up by the bootstraps and play in the Holiday Bowl is the best damn thing for you. It's not going to go pretty, but it'll be the start to kind of fixing things. And I don't know how long this is going to drag out as far as a head coaching search. Every AD worth the salt, they already have a list of potential candidates. But how long does this search take? That's the massive question, right? Because you don't have a lot of wiggle room. You don't know where you stand now with a lot of the coaching candidates because a lot of the coaching candidates have also been swooped up. We talked about this earlier. Brennan Marion, who's now the head coach at Sacramento State, he was probably a target that Washington State would have looked at. Offensive mind, bright, young, and runs an exciting offense. Sounds pretty familiar to Washington State fans. A lot of these guys are getting snatched up already. And what we also have is, in this era of college football, I think the days of an assistant coach running and taking that first head coaching opportunity that comes your way, that's not always going to happen because the pay is so much more competitive now being a position coach. And also you afford yourself the luxury to wait for a better job and better opportunity to come your way. And Washington State's job and opportunity is still a lot better than a lot of the group of five jobs that are out there. That is a reality. They are on better footing than a lot of them because the Pac-12 parachute that Oregon State and Washington State still have of the $50 million apiece over that 2-year run, that puts you in more solid footing than, you know, teams in the middle back end of the other group of five conferences. You do have a small inherited advantage there. Plus, you've got a really good fan base too that's built in and good. Like, Coug fans are really good. So you do have a leg up, but it's a mountain to climb to get to the place that Washington State has been, which is not just a really damn good program since Mike Leach took it back over.
I think the unfortunate part is that Washington State will never climb that mountain.
Nope.
And I don't think that that's unfair to say. And so right now it hurts because you were in that place at one point. But there's a lot of teams that at one point were in that place and no longer are. Mm-hmm. So you have to change your expectation. Like, you used to have a really good, high-paying job. Well, you got fired. You're at a new company.
Yep.
You have a good job. You do all right. You're one of the better, you know, salespeople at your work. You're one of the better architects. You're one of the better teachers. But there's a finite amount of money that you can make. And so you have to get used to that.
I think that what sucks, too, is that you look at a guy like Jason Eck, who just got the New Mexico job, right? He was over at Idaho. Would have been awesome.
great hire.
Would have been not far for him to go and relocate to. He could have gotten boots on the ground and running really quickly. And that's the thing that sucks about the timing of all of this, right? Is we were talking about the whether it's a young and up-and-coming coordinator or some of those FCS jobs in positions, those are going to be harder to lure those guys out of. And a guy like Eck is already gone. He's already boots running somewhere else in New Mexico. Side note on that, former Westland Lion and Idaho Vandal, Mark Hamper, saw he's taking a visit to USC today. Wide receiver.
Good for him.
Yeah, that'd be a little bit of a step up for him.
I think he would do all right down there. In that offense, yeah. I hope Lincoln Riley figures it out. I want him to figure it out.
Boy, the whole leader of men thing is starting to become a bigger issue right now.
You want to talk about getting guys on paper that are talented? That, you know, Urban, so much.
Urban Meyer said something today that I think was a really valid point with Lincoln Riley when he was on the Herd. I want to touch on that a little bit because getting a good head coach is not just getting a good system. We'll get to that after Will with SportsCenter. Urban Meyer was on with Colin Cowherd today. The Herd.
I heard that.
Do you know who that is?
Colin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard him a time or two.
He's on here from 9 to noon.
It's great.
Yeah, right before our show. And one thing that Urban Meyer said, and boy, is this reigning true for USC, is that he said they've lost some momentum. So much in college football is momentum and being cool. And it is USC finds a way to like generate this buzz about their program every time they fire a coach, right? But since Pete Carroll, hasn't this happened? Where like there's this buzz, there's this boost. Hey, they're going to be back. Everything's going to be fine. And then all of a sudden they lose their steam relatively quickly. And I don't, whether it's Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Clay Helton, or now Lincoln Riley, we've seen it happen where it's like, nope, here it comes. USC's going to be back. They're going to be great again. And they come crashing down. Being the cool team and the flashy team and getting that momentum, it's really damn hard. And it isn't just getting a good play caller, getting a young head coach. And we talked about this yesterday, dynamic personalities. Look at the coaches in the college football playoff, the 12 coaches. With the exception of Ryan Day, all of them have that juice in some way, shape, or form. From Kurt Cignetti to Kenny Dillingham, Dan Lanning, Kirby Smart and Dabo Swinney have it in a completely different way. Dabo's is, he has a truly unique player that he is going after. They're really talented. They're really talented. But it's different than the type of personality that Kirby Smart is going after or Lanning is going after, right?
Right.
The wiring in being different in that regard. But Dabo Swinney, like, we can mock him and talk about all of the times that he has been hypocritical in his stances and the things that he says about, oh, we're never going to go to the portal. Well, they just went to the portal yesterday. Oh, well, the day that college football players get paid is the day I have to find something new. Yeah, guess what? NIL, yeah, they've been getting paid for a few years now, Dabo. You're not giving up that $10 million a year paycheck anytime soon, and you're not going anywhere. We can mock that and criticize that, but the reality of it is that Dabo Swinney is a damn good football coach, and he has carried momentum. They still recruit, maybe not in a top five level every year. They recruit at an insanely high level at Clemson, and he does a really damn good job. Every single one of these coaches, they have that momentum that they are able to carry with their program. Lanning's doing it better than anybody else in college football right now. They're recruiting at a level that is unheard of at the institution. They're winning games. They're having success in the recruiting trail and in the transfer portal. And everybody said, I know I can, without even looking, I know what the text line is going to say. It's easy to do when you have that bag. Yeah, Georgia has that bag. Tennessee has that bag. Alabama has that bag. Florida has that bag. LSU has that bag. USC has that bag. It gets you in the door. It helps close deals. But recruiting, the core of it is still building relationships and finding talent, not just the flash. You were talking about this with Ohio State, right?
Yep.
A lot of guys get propped up in recruiting services, and they're just not that good.
All the time.
But it is evaluating that talent, finding those fits. And the people are like, who is Dan Lanning actually recruited that's been a good fit? I don't know. Everybody out of the portal.
Mateo Uiagalelei.
Mateo is a dude. Jordan James was a Georgia commit who has been, well, according to ESPN, the 37th best player in the entire college football playoff. Okay? He's really damn good, right? Josh Connerly, really good football player.
Yep.
I mean, they have actually a lot of these guys that he has recruited, and they play a pivotal role for this team. Fill your gaps and you get your roster up to a national championship level. You do that through the transfer portal. And those guys are veterans, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be plenty of opportunities for guys to grow and become those players, though, for Oregon. But for USC, man, you see that momentum that is being lost? Yeah. That's your head coach is losing that momentum. And Lincoln Riley, he's still one of the best play callers in schematic-wise. Unbelievable what USC does.
Offensively, yes.
It's incredible what they do. But you got to get everybody to pull in the same direction. That's the number one job of a head coach.
Well, I think his biggest issue is he doesn't recruit the trenches well. And Colin had a piece a couple weeks ago where he tried to say basically like a USC five-star is really a Georgia four-star. And I completely disagree with that. And his point about it was the skill players are still in California, but the O and D linemen, they're not there. And I just disagree. I think that Riley has done a poor job of getting in good with the high schools out there. He's not
no doubt
gone to Bosco. He's not gone to Mater Dei. Like, you have a talent-rich bed in your backyard, and for whatever reason, he has chosen not to recruit it as well as he should have. If you go in, and what Pete Carroll did a great job of, he made a map and said, "This, if you're in this area, that's ours, and we're going to get you, and we're going to develop you." And look, there are times where, you know, maybe a staff will look at a player and go, he doesn't fit this system. It isn't what we want here. And so you don't grab a guy who's in that area.
Yep.
But right now, you're not even going and grabbing the guys that you want in that area. For whatever reason, Lincoln Riley doesn't relate to the guys in the trenches. When I watch Dan Lanning, and I think Kirby Smart is going to fall into this, and Duck Van might not like this, Mario Cristobal falls into this as well.
No doubt about it.
There is an anger, but it's a passion, and it's a drive, and it's a fire. When you see Lanning going after it with Taylor Lewan, where they're basically punching each other in celebration of a victory.
Throwing out.
My meathead butt goes, that's awesome.
Yep.
That rocks. And
it's connecting to young people, man.
It's young people connection, but it's a connection into a group that doesn't think like the others do.
Yep.
The skill players, you can win them over with the flash, the pizzazz. And you can win certain O-linemen and D-line over with that too. But the majority of them that you're going to win over is by building a trust with them and by building that hard-nosed blue-collar mentality, and they don't do it. And I commend Lanning because he might have done this from watching Kirby Smart and by watching Nick Saban, who are great at recruiting the trenches. But the one thing that Mario did to an extremely high level, and it's why Oregon is where they're at, is he knew how to recruit O-linemen because he was an O-lineman.
Transformed recruiting in the trenches. And this text, 503-864-6326, on the Vancouver Ford text line. As a Duck, you're not wrong, but you're completely overlooking the bag. None of this happens without the money he has to use. Lanning is great, but put him in Pullman and this isn't happening. I'm not overlooking that at all because I didn't mention Washington State or Oregon State as teams that have the bag. There are the haves and the have-nots, and that's the reality of it. 100%. Like, that's exactly why. And it sucks is that why Jake Dickert is going to Wake Forest right now, right? Because you want to have all of those tools at your disposal. And that is one of the things that, look, there's a reason why the allure for the Big Ten in Oregon, it was a brand, and it was something that they wanted to attach themselves with Oregon and Washington because of that bag, of the financial stability that those two teams could have because they are funded NIL-wise, right?
Right.
There's a reason why they are in the Big Ten and not the Big 12 because the Arizona schools, Colorado, Utah, they were the next tier of stability with competing at the NIL level. There are haves and have-nots. Yes. There's no mistake about it. You don't compare them, though.
Also,
yeah,
to look at Oregon and say they have the biggest bag is incorrect.
They got a really big bag. They don't spend like people believe they do.
What people believe is that Phil Knight comes in and just spends $50 million every year, and that's why they're where they're at. And once Phil dies, they won't do that. The rumor around Texas for next year's NIL is insane. They're talking about Texas being in the upper 30 million. Oregon isn't spending that.
Yep.
They're spending a lot of money, yes, and they have a very good bag that they can use to be a part of the haves, like you're saying. But to come in here and say that the only reason they're getting recruits is because of the money is incorrect.
Yep. That is very, 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 very true.
And they're not spending the most.
But they're not spending. They do have...
They spend a lot.
A lot of money.
They're not spending the most.
No, I was reading something that they weren't even in like the top... their collective is, but as far as the money that they're spending, I think they're not even the top eight in college football.
Yeah, my understanding was it's the South. Like, the big rumor that the recruiting experts that know much more about recruiting than I do, that I listen to, say that it's closing in on $40
million
of what Texas is going to be willing to spend. Because you have to factor in that the salary cap with the house settlement would be 20.
Yeah.
Then they'd spend another 20.
Yeah.
That's what the claim is. And because that was around the talk around UNC, because UNC is now going to spend more money. And so the claim is like, Bill's going to UNC because they're going to spend 30. And it's like, well, is it because they're going to spend 20 with the house?
Yeah. But you know what? That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, man. And there are more than I'll ever make. And it is very, very, very big gap between the big boys and the ones that are not.
100%.
All right. Well, we'll get to some more feedback. We have a big ruling. The NCAA takes it on the chin yet again. Next on The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
NCAA keeps taking losses left and right. And this one today is a preliminary injunction that has been ordered and granted in favor of Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia. Remember him beating Alabama, going crazy?
He's
great
awesome,
interview
dude.
After.
He's greatness.
Yeah. Chief United States District Judge William L. Campbell has ruled in favor of Diego Pavia, ordering the NCAA cannot enforce a rule, bylaw 12.02.6, which is a rule that says Diego Pavia is out of eligibility due to his time playing junior college football. This could be huge. This could be huge. And what is to be determined in all of this is the judge ruling against the NCAA in the case of Diego Pavia, or any player who has played junior college football, because what Pavia is suing for is another year of eligibility to play at Vanderbilt. Now, Pavia spent 2 years at the New Mexico Military Institute in 2020 and 2021. Then he went to New Mexico State, where he played the 2022 and 2023 seasons. This year, he played at Vanderbilt. If you're counting, that's 5 years of playing football. Well, the NCAA said, well, guess what? You played your 4 years, you're done. This judge is ruling that year at junior college is a non-counter.
Which one, 2020?
The 2021 year, because it was technically a red shirt in 20, but he'd be at 5 years anyways, because he played one at New Mexico Military Institute, played two at New Mexico State, one at Vanderbilt. That's 4 years. You have those 4 years of eligibility. This ruling is that they're just basically saying, no, we're going to call it a non-counties because of the fact that Diego Pavia now can earn money, right?
Right. Well, I was wondering, because 2020 is the COVID year.
Yeah. But that in 2021, he threw for a bajillion yards.
Well, I was just wondering how it worked for, because like my COVID year makes sense because I had already been there.
Yep.
But if it's your first year in college, do you get a double COVID year? Was kind of my, like, if he redshirted,
yeah,
well, does he already, still get to have the COVID year?
It's usually 4 years. It's usually 4 years of playing. But I don't know. We'll find this out, man. But that could open up a lot of doors for a lot of players to come back for one more run if they had that year in junior college football back. And look, if this is something that is widespread and they just say, hey, you go to play junior college football, which I probably think they should do. If you play junior college football, that's a non-counties. You can play 4 years at a four-year institution. Then junior college football becomes that much more viable.
I kind of agree. It makes a bigger deal for it.
All right, that does it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow from noon to 3. Danny Cannell will join us coming up at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Up next, 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's Primetime with Isaac and Suk, a Buck and Ortner edition. Double duty. Thanks for coming in, Will. We'll see you tomorrow right here on The Fan.